Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles presented by Bolin Media. I am Ross Bolin here with Barrett Dudley, and today we are diving into True Detective Night Country with a discussion and review of Part 1, which premiered last night on Max. Barrett, appropriate weather we're having.
Oh, very appropriate. We're experiencing our own Night Country here, and if you're watching us on YouTube, then you can see I'm bundled up. I'm bundled up here.
Layered up
because I had to leave my house today to get over here. Yeah. And it was treacherous. It's below 30 degrees at the moment here in Austin, Texas, and so I had to gear up the truck, the Volvo out there. Yeah. it's not cut out for this type of tundra.
No.
So I put the snow chains on.
Yeah, you got to
be safe out there. There is a thin dusting of frost on the roads right now.
Very thin.
Yeah, very thin.
But
dusting.
Has to be taken seriously.
Has to be taken seriously. And I got over here, and we're really just experiencing our own Night Country. The sun's going to set tonight. I don't know when we're going to see that.
We don't know if it'll ever come back up.
I don't know if it's coming back up.
We don't know.
Yeah,
it's always
fun
when we have these Arctic circumstances in Texas, and particularly in you know, South Texas and Central Texas, where Barrett and I are located in Austin, because we freak out and we're not built for this, and then the rest of the country is experiencing much harsher conditions. So I always feel like such a baby complaining,
it's outlandish. It's pathetic. It's really, really pathetic. Like, them getting text messages from like Travis County, like emergency warnings.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, weather severe. Stay off the grid. Don't use your energy. Like,
pets indoors. I'm like, who the fuck sticks their, you know what I mean?
People are ransacking grocery stores over the last week preparing for it. Literally today is the day that they were preparing for.
Yeah. It's a 2-day stretch where we're going to be sub 30 pretty much the whole day.
Yeah, yeah,
and
right.
The city is in chaos as a result. Driving over here, nobody on the roads. Most of the people I did see going like 10 miles an hour under the speed limit.
Yeah.
Just like, any second I could hit the black ice. So it was just funny as hell watching the show last night where they're, I mean, like, it doesn't get colder than where they're at in Alaska.
I get it. To a degree, I get it. You know, we had the snowpocalypse in 21, which was truly insane. That was insane.
Yeah, yeah.
And then last year, we had the ice thing where all the trees were breaking. But, like, people are so clearly scarred by those two events.
This is climate trauma.
This is just a very normal winter day today. Like, it's just winter, man. It's just like, yeah, it was a deep freeze, or it was a hard freeze last night. And, like, yeah, you got to be careful. You got to watch out for ice on the roads if you're up early this morning driving around. But like, yeah, people are treating it like, you know, it looks like The Last of Us out there right now.
Bit of an overreaction.
So, yes,
and you can't even help yourself. Like, we went to the grocery store on Friday.
Oh, we participated in the vicious cycle. We were like, oh, what? There's going to be no food? We better go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in part, it's also because, just as a final note, our state's electrical grid and power grid has failed us multiple times over the past 5 years, to the point that people are like, oh, it's going to drop below 30. Better go stock up on water.
Right.
And so, like, I went to the water aisle at the grocery store, and it was a ghost town. It was all the water was gone. No H2O, Barrett. So,
just the Dasani, which you said, get that shit out of here. You didn't even want that. You'll drink the tiger clamshell, the tiger mollusk mussel water before you drink Dasani. Zebra mussels. That's what I was
thinking. There you go.
Yeah. 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 But you got to go out. You got to get your Funyuns and your Lone Stars and your popcorn.
Supply guy.
You got to call up your supply guy. You got to call up the supply guy so that you can enjoy Ferris Bueller on the ice day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's dive into this thing. So, first off, a reminder that creator and showrunner for the first 3 seasons of True Detective, Nick Pizzolatto, is out. And Issa Lopez is in as writer, director, and showrunner. Now, Barrett and I are going to walk through a lot of what we saw in this season 4 premiere. And then on the second half, or the back part of the show, we'll give our overall thoughts on the vibe and how things seem compared to the first 3 seasons, which, again, will be contributed to Issa Lopez, the new writer, director, and showrunner. So season 4 kicks off with an epigraph that said, "For we do not know what beasts the night dreams when its hours grow too long for even God to be awake." And that quote is attributed to Hildred Castain. Just a very ominous quote. If you didn't want to dig any further, I don't think you had to, although I did Google it. And I came up with a passage here from Vanity Fair giving us a little bit of context that said, the text is attributed to Hildred Castain, a name that might be familiar to True Detective Season 1 diehards. Hildred is the protagonist of a short story found in Robert W. Chambers' 1895 collection, The King in Yellow, a key influence on Nick Pizzolatto's original True Detective. So just with that alone, it does seem like they're going to be doing some referencing to the first three seasons, perhaps some tie-ins of some kind. And I thought that was really something that they chose to start off with an epigraph that is that can be tied to season one of True Detective and referencing this.
Love that.
This soul, Hildred Castain. Anyway, then we're in Alaska, 150 miles north of the Arctic Circle, where a man is hunting what looks to be like elk. Was that elk or something like elk?
Yeah, reindeer.
They look like Santa's reindeer.
Yeah.
But before he can kill one, they all throw themselves off of a cliff.
Yeah, okay. So, very, very interesting start here.
Which never comes up again, this episode.
Last sunset of the year.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was curious. Is that what they did? Did they all commit Harry Carey?
Well, we didn't get the shot, you know, to prove it.
Yeah.
But it seemed quite dramatic. It seemed like they were all...
It seemed like the sun started to go down.
And they said, we're
they
out.
They smelled something. They got spooked. And they said, we're not sticking around for this. And they threw themselves off a cliff. That's what it seemed. That's what it seemed like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think if they'd survived, they would have given us that shot of like them, like, you know, 20 feet down, still running or whatever. But yeah, that was an interesting, weird scene. Like Barrett said, and this is one of the things I knew about Alaskan winter, I guess. They do go through these extended periods in some parts of the country, or the state, rather. It is part of the United States. In the state of Alaska, where there is no sunshine,
right?
There is no sunrise. It is just night country.
It's just night country, man.
Yeah, that's what they say.
That's what they call it.
Yeah. So then we're at the Tsalal Arctic Research Station, watching Ferris Bueller jam and twist and shout, meeting the scientists that occupy this research station, at least in some capacity. Mm-hmm. Of course, before some really freaky shit happens and they all disappear, and one of the scientists has like a weird spasm. It's almost like a seizure, and then he turns around and he's like horrified and he says, "She's awake," before the power shuts off, right?
Yeah.
And this is a running theme. We hear this "She's awake" whispered or said in several different instances throughout the course of this first episode. And then the delivery guy that Barrett referenced earlier, he's their supply guy, shows up to bring some Funyuns and some beers and some food and some drink, and then the place is totally empty except for something like fast moving and terrifying, which we don't get a look at.
Right.
And the supply guy finds a severed human tongue, and then we cut to the intro sequence and theme song, which is Billie Eilish's "Bury a Friend."
Yeah, a couple of questions for you here.
Yeah, yeah.
Was our one guy making a TikTok about sandwiches?
Think so. Yeah.
Was he was going live on the gram?
He was influencing.
He was influencing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Second question was, oh, yes. Did you ever read the book Ice Station?
Y'all recommended it to me.
Yeah,
I think
you
even gave me your copy.
I may have. This is like a book
to answer your question, that the
fellas got real into, and I probably like 8th or 9th grade. Something like that.
We were middle school.
We were young book readers, kind of taking our first foray into like adult fiction, right?
Right.
People were starting to read like Michael Crichton, and like, you know, stuff like that, I think.
Yeah.
And so this book, we got a hold of this book called Ice Station, which was basically about like this Arctic base where weird, freaky shit started happening. And then I think there's some whales involved. There were like some killer whales involved or something in the end of it. It's been too long, so I can't completely recall like the whole story of it.
Yeah, it came out in 98.
I'm just throwing it out there because the Tsalal base and the fact that some freaky stuff starts happening and we're in the Arctic and like it's science and it's like something, you know, something spooky is happening.
Yeah.
It very much reminds me of Ice Station a little bit. And I wonder if Issa Lopez has read this book and if there was any inspiration drawn.
Ice Station is an Australian thriller, it says, written by Matthew Riley.
Matthew Riley, that's right. Yeah.
Or he's an Australian thriller writer, maybe is what they're saying there.
Anyway, just wanted to throw that comparison out there.
Yeah. What'd you think of the intro, the sequence, and the choosing of a Billie Eilish track for this thing?
I thought that was interesting. It's not what I expected.
Not what I expected either. I kind of liked it. One of the first major vibe shifts,
I would say. And then, you know, to this point in the episode, like this had me totally geeked up. I love mysterious, like weird science, biology, geographical, like, oh, the sun's not coming back up for 22 weeks. Like, that shit's tight.
Yeah, welcome to night country.
The Salal base,
reference these guys are out there by themselves, right. Like, all year. They have, like, once a week contact with society, with civilization, and it's the supply guy bringing fucking Funyuns. Interesting setup in there. Much nicer entertainment system than I would have expected in a Salal research base.
The intro sequence, it had me going.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Up to this point in the episode, I was truly stoked. I really liked the Billie Eilish song that they chose, Bury a Friend. Just a Billie Eilish fan in general at this point. And so up until the intro sequence, feeling good. Vibes are high.
Yes.
I like the kind of tone difference between this one and the first three seasons that they've kind of established in the first 10 minutes here. And I'm really interested to see what goes on in the rest of the episode. So,
huzzah.
The case of what happened at this research base belongs to Police Chief Liz Danvers, who is, of course, played by Jodie Foster. And she and her second-in-command, Hank Pryor, who's played by John Hawks, who is in a lot of stuff.
Yes.
It took me a minute. I was like, wait, why do I know his face? And then once I cracked into his IMDb, I was like, dear God. So, like, Eastbound and Down, Deadwood, the movie The Perfect Storm, Everest, and a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah, I remember him quite a bit from a movie where he kind of plays like a cult leader. I think it was Elizabeth Olsen's big breakthrough. It's called like Mary Madeline something.
Okay.
Did you ever see that?
I didn't see that one, but yeah, John Hawks in a lot of things, and he's a pretty good little character actor. And,
yes, well-known character actor, yeah.
Yeah, so they show up to the research base where Hank's son, Pete Pryor, who's like a junior officer, is already there. He's already on the scene. Danvers immediately hears the music, Twist and Shout, playing from the TV, which it turns out they cannot get to stop. And she kind of, I don't know if you, like, this flagged for you, but Danvers, it seemed like she hated Twist and Shout.
Yeah, she immediately wants that.
She walks in, she's like, well, where's the music come from? And like busts in there, and that's priority number one, is get this thing turned off. And of course, Pete's trying to explain to her, like, hey, we've been trying to turn it off for a while. There is no turning it off. And then she finds the secret, you know.
Not a Beatles fan.
Yeah, she says. Doesn't like the Beatles. She finds the secret, DVD player cubby in there and gets it turned off. But that was weird to me. It just made me think, like, maybe later on we get some kind of flashback for Danvers where Twist and Shout traumatized her somehow or something. I don't know. She was just really, really adamant about getting that turned off as soon as possible.
Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene is the movie I'm thinking
of. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a lot of M's.
Yeah, it's four mm-hmm. M's. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we find out some about Salal Station. It's been operational for 18 years. They're researching the origins of life on Earth, and it's an all-male crew of scientists, okay? So then we get some detail on, like, most of the research.
Oh, that had me, when they ask that question, what are they looking for out here?
Yeah.
Why are they digging up all these, like, cylinders of ice?
Why are they digging in the ice?
Why are they digging in the ice?
Yeah.
Just trying to find the origin of life. That, I was like, yes! Give me that Prometheus shit, baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the immediate Prometheus vibes there, where you're just like, nothing good happens, Barrett, when you're looking for the origin of life.
No, that, everybody knows that.
You try to find the origin of life, and life ceases to be.
That's right.
Everyone dies.
That is right.
Yep. That's what happens. But most of the research facility's funding apparently comes from an NGO. But then, you know, over the course of the episode, this kind of unfolds where Danvers tells Pete to look more into it, find out who's paying for this place. And right when he's about to tell us later in the episode, like, where he's like, most of it's from an NGO, but then there's this, and then that lady in the cell who drunk crashed her car won't stop yelling. Mm-hmm. So we never get to hear what else he finds out in this episode, but you have to imagine there will be some kind of a conspiracy there involving the funding of this research facility. Someone wrote, "We are all dead" on the whiteboard, which is weird because, like, one of the big pieces here that I probably should have mentioned already, when the supply guy shows up, it is very clear that everyone who was in this research station left extremely abruptly. There is no blood, there is no bodies, there's just the tongue, and then there's like the sandwich that somebody had just made, there's chips, there's a beer that was just opened, the movie is still playing, the guy's treadmill is still set on his workout that he was in the middle of, that he must have paused or whatever.
Right.
Like, it, whatever took these people or whatever happened to these people happened almost immediately. So it's weird that on the whiteboard, it just says, "We are all dead." Now, we did get a shot earlier at the Salal Research Station when we first get introduced to it, before the intro music, before Billie Eilish, where one of the scientists is standing right in front of that whiteboard. So I guess it's plausible that very quickly he wrote, "We are all dead," but I don't know how he would have known. Like, anyway, that was the one creepy thing they find aside from the tongue is the whiteboard that says, "We are all dead." And Liz Danvers surmises that due to the mayonnaise on a sandwich left behind going runny and the clothes in the washer stinking from being left wet, that everyone disappeared 48 hours ago at least. So this thing's been empty for a couple of days. The scientists that were in there, the all-male crew, seems to have disappeared very, very quickly, and nobody has a fucking clue what's going on. Now, this tongue has two grooves in it from licking the thread on fishing nets. And as a result, Danvers thinks that this is a like a local,
a native woman's tongue.
Mm-hmm. So Danvers returns to her office, and that's when we meet Evangeline Navarro, who is now a trooper. She got busted down to trooper, Barrett. She's a bad girl. She did something wrong. She wouldn't let this case go. She couldn't let it go, you know?
Yeah, she's on a completely different force.
Yeah.
She's like a state trooper, I think.
Right.
Not even a... She had to switch. I don't know if it was a demotion or what.
Yeah. I mean, they made it sound like it was a demotion. Danvers kind of gets into, she's like, they're talking about the other case that Navarro clearly thinks this is connected to, Annie, who was murdered.
Anna Kay. Yeah.
Yeah. And Danvers says that she wouldn't let it go, and she kept, like, poking at and asking questions with the wrong people.
Right.
And
then
that got her in trouble, right? Because you start asking questions to the wrong people, man, and next thing you know, you get busted down a trooper.
Right.
So Evangeline Navarro's in Danvers' office waiting for her. We get a little bit of a feel for their relationship. It seems kind of contentious.
Yes.
Right? A little bit of conflict there. Can't quite tell exactly what happened between them. Boxer Callie Rice is playing Evangeline Navarro, which is just a really interesting casting choice. You've got, like, Jodie Foster, who's very well established. Everybody knows Jodie Foster. And then... you've got Callie, who has got the double face piercings. She got what are those called? Studs, maybe?
Cheek studs?
Cheek studs? I don't know. But
I'm sure it has most of those piercings have like a name.
Yeah.
I don't know what those are.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she's a boxer professionally and also an actress. And she's playing Evangeline Navarro, a state trooper haunted by this unsolved murder of a local woman named Annie. And again, her and Liz have some kind of history together that obviously will unfold more over the next 5 episodes. Liz Danvers gets a call from a mom at her daughter's school. She's very, very upset. And it turns out Danvers' daughter was banging a 16-year-old girl and filming it, apparently. We don't get a feel for how old Danvers' daughter is. We just know the other girl is 16.
Mm-hmm.
Does seem like she's probably a little older than the 16-year-old, right? But she looked roughly 16 to me, so I have no idea. But on the way home, while scolding her daughter, a drunk driver crashes right in front of them, and it's like some local mom that Danvers knows. It's Stacy Chalmers, and you're really getting the feel at this point.
Is that Stacy Chalmers?
Yeah, somebody like yells out the window like she hit that pole last week, you know, like she just did this.
Yeah, yeah.
But you get the feel at this point that Ennis, Alaska, where we're located here, a very small town. Everybody knows each other, right? So Danvers approaches this car, and this is another one of the weird moments in the episode. She like takes a step in the street as she's approaching the car, and there's like a weird flashback or deja vu moment that occurs that we'd get no further context on in this episode.
Correct.
But there's a lot of little moments like that in this first, season four episode where you're like, what the fuck is happening here? What is this? What's going on? It's just, there's freaky deaky shit happening in Alaska, in Night Country, in Innis after that last sunset, Barrett. That's what we do know for certain.
Yeah. Laura and I were talking about, right about when, at this point of the episode, just like how do you end up in Innis, Alaska? You know, I think the main way is that you are born there.
Yeah.
And then you don't leave.
Yeah.
But like, who moves to Innis, Alaska? Who moves to a country which is always night?
I think one of the answers question is somebody who's trying to get the hell away from everything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
That's a good answer.
Somebody
that's
who wants a fresh start where nobody's going to ask questions, like that kind of thing.
Yep.
So anyway, she handles this drunk driver, Stacy Chalmers, and just a bizarre scene unfolding there.
And she's pretty like aggressively mad about it.
Yeah.
You know? She kind of screams at Stacy at one point.
You get the feeling Stacy's been in quite a bit of trouble for drinking.
Yeah, or that this, you know, my read was also that like clearly there's some trauma with Danvers in a drunk driving incident, which is alluded to a little bit in a later scene, and just that this whole thing is just like this is getting to her a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you do notice that there's no Mr. Danvers
around
in this episode, so maybe something happened there with him, and he's gone. So yeah, because I mean even her daughter says at one point, you know, you don't have to pretend to be my mom. It's like she was a stepmother. The dad died, and then now she's trying to be a good mom still, but like, you know, there's a weird disconnect there.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't think that's her blood daughter.
Right.
I think that's either like a step or an adopted daughter.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
My guess was step.
Okay.
But I'm assuming we'll find out more.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
My just early guess, I'm just throwing a dart here, is that like her real daughter or real child died in a drunk driving accident, potentially with dad.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe also this child's dad also died in that accident.
Sure.
And she took guardianship, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's a stretch.
Well, sure, but
I'm throwing darts out here.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there's dots to be connected, you know? Somebody's got to do it. So the other cop, Trooper Navarro, goes and meets with the dude who's the brother of the Annie who died, who lost her tongue, right? Which we get bits and pieces of Annie's story throughout the course of the episode. She was stabbed 30 times, kicked after she was dead. Annie used to protest the mining companies, and this is a mining town. The miners or whoever's in charge, the powers that be, didn't like that. So there was the running theory was that, quote unquote, Innis killed Annie.
Right.
Because she was kind of standing against the entire community, and they didn't appreciate that. So Navarro thinks the tongue that they found at the research station belongs to Annie. So she goes and meets with her brother, Annie's brother, who's kind of like, listen, do we have to get back into all this? Let's just let sleeping dogs lie, for lack of a better phrase, and doesn't want to drum up all the trauma again, you know?
Right. Yep.
Later, we get some flashes to, like, you know, Navarro was first on the scene. She's the one who found Annie's body, and it really messed her. Like, this is the explanation for why she clung to the case to the point of getting herself bumped down to trooper, because she saw the anger, the hatred, and the evil that was in her murder, and with the 30 stab wounds and the kicking and whatnot. So, during this conversation with Annie's brother, Navarro also has a flashback. It's to her time in the military where she is having a little chat with a dude who has half his head blown off.
Yeah.
And he, like, whispers something creepy to her.
So, I think that I hear this word whispered at least two other times in the episode, and I think that it's somebody saying, listen.
Yeah. Yes. Listen.
Yeah.
To who or what, we don't know.
We don't know. Yeah.
But just creepy whisper shit.
But probably her.
Listen.
Who is awake.
Yes, her. She.
She.
Who is awake, yeah. Yeah. Navarro then visits her sister, who is having some kind of a mental health episode, which apparently their mother had issues with delusions or mental health, and there's a concern that the sister will be following in her path. We're getting a lot of characters thrown at us here.
Yes.
One thing I would note was kind of overwhelming, because in the back of my head, just to jump forward to a larger picture thought, I kept thinking, this thing's only six episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a six-episode show. Navarro's sister... Yeah, Annie's brother, a lot of side characters being chunked into the mix here, just very early on. Anyway, something to keep an eye on. Then Navarro goes and power rides some local barkeep to fruition, and then she steals his SpongeBob toothbrush.
Yeah, yeah.
I like this scene because it gives you like a deeper feel for the kind of woman that you're dealing with, that Navarro is, right? She's not fucking around.
No.
Very much in control and powerful. Powerful with those those two face studs, you know? She's working it in there. She's not going to slow down if you ask, Barry. She's going to get her nut, steal your toothbrush, and leave.
That's correct. Yeah, don't you dare ask to slow down.
Hell no. No, she's calling the shots here, buddy. Pal, you just lay there and take it. So then, I don't know, a bunch of other random shit happens, but to skip to some important stuff, Danvers finds a one-eyed polar bear stuffed animal, mm-hmm, and she's like, huh, look at that. And then almost immediately after that scene, Navarro almost crashes her car into a one-eyed polar bear after hearing, she's awake, whispered from no one or nowhere in particular while driving and on the phone.
It was a one-eyed, one-armed, flying purple polar bear.
Thank you, Barrett, for that remix. What, any thoughts on this? What the fuck, the polar bear? I mean, beyond giving us further evidence that, like, weird shit happens out here in Alaska, in fucking Ennis, in night country, where there's no further sunrises to be expected.
For the rest of the damn year.
What the fuck is this, man? What is happening on this show?
So, I think we're left to wonder whether that we're actually seeing a polar bear or not. Like, is that
or
just
is
a vision?
It a vision of some kind,
right? This show is very, or this season is very clearly going to start like bending the line between the spirit world and
reality.
And reality,
yeah.
Right? There's already some allusions to that. You know, Danvers kind of like mocks Agent Navarro, Trooper Navarro, with like her spirit animal, right? Like, oh, what did your spirit animal tell you that? Like, that type of thing. And then we've got the other woman who eventually leads to the discovery of
Rose,
the science team. She's seeing the ghost of presumably her dead son.
Yeah.
And then we've got Navarro's sister who is experiencing some mental health stuff, but also is it more than that? Is it visions? Is it a spiritual experience? Like, what's happening? So like, you see this polar bear and it's so kind of like, it's so jarring. It's so out of place.
And in the middle of the road.
Middle of the road that and with its one eye, right? I think you're like, okay, is Officer Navarro just seeing this, or is this actually a polar bear just traipsing through Ennis?
Yeah, I mean, but the odds that like Danvers, like, oh look, the stuffed animal polar bear, it's missing an eye,
right,
and then
right,
it's like it was just very bizarre.
Yeah, you know, it was, and I think you're probably supposed to start like maybe making the leap to, is the polar bear she? Is the polar bear the she that's awake and is gonna, you know, create some havoc? I think it's a red herring right now. I don't think that is who she is.
Like the polar bear in Lost. They never got around to explaining that one.
But other than that, I don't really have. Yeah, no. I think it's what you're saying. I think a lot of weird stuff just happened. There's even a little nod to this, right? It's like Danvers shows up at Talal. Am I saying that right?
Salal.
Yeah. Thank you. And the other detective is like, God, first night, weird shit's already happening.
Yeah, like they know weird shit's gonna happen. But this is faster than usual.
During night country, but this is even faster than usual, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple more things. So Danvers, she discovers a lead having to do with Annie's jacket. Again, Annie is the woman who was murdered, and they never solved the murder. Navarro was suspicious that Danvers never really looked into the case, never really... tried is the implication there, but Danvers finds all these. She's building a spiral of photos, all the evidence she's got between that case and I guess this one, and she sees like in one photo Annie has on this jacket with like a little symbol on the shoulder, and then she finds a photo of one, I think it's one of the scientists in the research station who's wearing what looks like that exact jacket except with the little symbol on the shoulder covered up by a smiley face patch.
Yeah, look. She's an old school detective, Ross.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to do old school detective work.
Yeah.
And that means getting all the case files, pulling every photo that you possibly can, spreading them around first in a grid on your floor, and then inevitably turning it into a creepy spiral.
Of course, why not?
As you put all of the pieces together and you start linking things and you have world-class vision and sight and just like, you're an observation.
She's got instincts, you know?
She got instincts, you observe, you notice things, and she sees that pink jacket with a little tear on it.
She says, huh?
What do you know? I think I just saw a pink jacket that looked just like that. And guess what? It's got a patch right over where that tear would have been.
Wow. Wow.
That's just good police work.
Can't be coincidence. There are no coincidences, Barrett. There are no coincidences. So we also meet, as Barrett mentioned, this woman, Rose, who you may notice as Petunia Dursley from Harry Potter.
Yes, or Andor season one. She is...
Oh, yeah, Andor.
She's Andor. Cassian Andor's like a mother figure.
Matriarch in some way, shape, or form. Anyway, she's out on the ice gutting a wolf, just, you know, as one does.
Right, yeah.
She's out there gutting a wolf. And she gets visited by her son, Travis. And we have to see this happen like three different times. Mm-hmm. But she's basically in there working this wolf. And she looks out and there's this guy who's clearly not dressed for the occasion.
No.
He's got no jacket. Yeah. He's got no shoes. And you're like, what the fuck is that? And at first, it gives you White Walker, Game of Thrones, season one, episode one vibes. Where you're like, okay. And by the time, the second or third time they show this cat, you're probably thinking he's dead, right? Or he's a ghost or some kind of a... I was like, are we doing zombies here on True Detective now? What the fuck is going on?
It was a little zombie-ish. It was a little like The Strangers-ish.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Just like real creepy. Creepy random people showing up outside your house, yeah.
Yeah, my wife was bummed out about this episode because we got to the end and she was like, this is too creepy.
Yeah.
She's like, this is a horror show
We're
now.
Going a little horror.
And I was like,
no,
it's going to be fine. Just, it's only six episodes. Just buckle up. Buckaroo. Anyway, so she gets visited by her son, Travis, and like the third time we get this scene, she follows Travis out into the fucking wilderness, basically. Or not the wilderness, but just out into the ice.
Out into the tundra, baby.
Yeah.
Into the Arctic.
And then he starts doing a wild
interpretive dance. That's exactly what I would call it.
For about 45 seconds, you got to watch this unfold. And then he points in a direction, which Rose then follows for how long, we don't really know, where she discovers several buried alive, it looks like, dead guys.
Yeah.
These are some of the men from the research
center.
That's
what it would appear, yeah.
And I think we get three of them here, and they all look like something absolutely terrible and horrifying is happening to them in their little dead poses. They're like, nah!
Yeah!
Like, they all died doing exactly that.
Yeah.
With their hands up, like, not me!
Somehow, it would seem that they froze in that position as well, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, and there's, like snow up to their necks.
Right,
and they're dead as hell.
Yeah,
very, very immediate death, it seems like. We get no, obviously, that's the way the episode ends, so we get no real explanation as to what the fuck has occurred here. And one other thing before we jump to the halfway point here. We got the photo spiral.
Yep.
Spirals are a big thing in the True Detective universe. If you didn't watch the first three seasons, don't worry about why. Just suffice it to say that in every single crime that is solved in the first three seasons, there are spirals, symbolic spirals involved in some way, shape, or form. We got Danvers making her spiral of photos. And then when they give us like this season on True Detective, we see very clearly that somebody's got a spiral tattooed into their forehead.
Yeah, it looks like these scientist guys may have spirals on their foreheads all of a sudden.
Might be doing some spirally stuff there too. So just something to look out for as we you know, get through these next 5 weeks out in night country, keeping your eye out for the old spirals. Today's episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Whether your resolution is to save money, eat better, or stress less, HelloFresh is here to help you do all three. Say hello to your most delicious year yet with ingredients, fresh ingredients, and chef-crafted recipes at a price you'll like delivered right to your door. Make saving time your breeziest resolution with quick, convenient recipes delivered right to you. Just choose your meals and select your delivery date. HelloFresh handles the meal planning and shopping, so all you have to do is open your weekly box of pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes to get cooking. They say breakfast is the most important meal of the day, and HelloFresh agrees. In fact, they're giving all subscribers free breakfast for life. That means you'll enjoy a totally free breakfast item with every single HelloFresh delivery. Now that's worth waking up for, Barrett. You all know I struggle in the kitchen. Not a great cook. That's why I love HelloFresh and how they make cooking easy and fast, even for an inexperienced chef like myself. Go to HelloFresh.com/OCCfree and use code OCCFREE, as in OCCFREE, for free breakfast for life. That's one breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life at HelloFresh.com/OCCFREE with code OCCFREE. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. So, Barrett, what did you think about episode one? What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, so you brought up something that I kind of forgot to remember while watching, this season is only six episodes. It's damn near
a shorty.
It's a shorty. It's a mini season. It's a mini series almost. And with that in mind, it kind of paints my review of this particular episode and probably knocks it down even a notch further than I had it to begin with. Which is not to say that I didn't like this episode. I just thought that if I'm judging solely as an episode of television, that's it, just an episode of TV.
Yes.
What did you do for me as an episode of television? I didn't think it was great. I thought that they tried to do before I say what I thought, I think that it also has the potential to be a great chessboard setter of an episode, basically.
Right.
It could fit into this season very well as a collection of six episodes. But from the jump, I thought they tried to jam in too much to this episode, and I didn't think that it really had it did not, after that first intro series, basically.
Yeah.
It didn't have much flow. I don't know if that's something you picked up on, but I just felt like a little, like, bounced around in the car from side to side, like,
oh, definitely.
We're here.
Yeah.
And like
Danvers Navarro. Yeah,
and like, so just, you know, I'm just kind of like, I'm throwing something out here, but like the drunk driving piece, you know, where Stacey Chalmers or whoever, like, I feel like maybe that whole thing could have been popped into episode two somehow.
Yeah,
and I'm just, you know, like it tried to give us so much with the I'm with Salal and the scientists and the big mystery. But also the previous murder of Anna Kay, and then the relationship between Navarro and Danvers, but also the relationship between Danvers and the other police, who's not her husband, because that's not her kid, even though I thought it was at first.
Yeah.
But they're just that is his son, but he's also getting married to a Russian bride that he's bringing in from the internet.
Right.
And again,
that's who ends up in Ennis.
And then right. And then there's Navarro going to see Anna Kay's brother, and then there's also her going to see her sister, who has mental health issues, just like their mom. And then there's also the woman with her dead ghost son, and she's out there, and she's finding the scientists. And it's just like
what the fuck, yeah.
It was a lot, man.
It
was a lot, and so I never basically in the end, it left me feeling, no pun intended, just a little cold, because I don't feel like I got any one good thing to kind of like grab onto and being like, this is what we're about. This is Night Country.
You got so much that it feels like you didn't get anything.
Yeah, a little bit.
And I mean, I liked what you said earlier. I thought like up until the intro sequence, there was good momentum. You're like, okay, all right, some freaky deaky shit happening here. Yep. I like it. Let's see what we got. And then they kind of never regain that same magic. And obviously, look, my read based on reviews of the show on the whole, none of which I've read specifically, but of which I'm aware, the show is being critically received at a high level.
Extremely high level.
People are saying it's the best season of True Detective ever, which is putting it up against one of my favorite seasons of TV in the history of television in season one of True Detective. And in my book is also blasphemy to say anything that, like, oh, this is, come on, shut the fuck up. Best season of True Detective ever. That's insane. But because of that, my read is that this first episode is all setting up the chessboard, as you put it.
And I would agree with that. And I definitely have kept that in mind. Obviously, the people that are able to write the reviews, like once
they've
the embargo is lifted, I think they've seen it. I think maybe all of it has been released to them.
Yes, yeah. They should have the full season to screen.
At the very least, they've seen, like we always like to say, at least three episodes, I would imagine.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I still have really high hopes. And I know that the way that I'm talking about this episode makes it sound like, you know, like I'm kind of
like it was a bummer,
like I'm pooping on it. And that's not really what I'm trying to do. It's just just as 60 minutes of television or 52 or whatever it was. Like,
It was okay. Yeah. I'm completely with you, though. I don't think you're being harsh.
Yeah.
I think most people who watched it probably feel that way. A little bit of steam there at the beginning. Kind of you get lost in the crazy mix of all the shit that you're shown over the course of the rest of this episode. And to me, when it ended, I immediately had some concerns. My biggest concern being there are five more of these. You just introduced us to all this stuff, all these people, what are seemingly some very complicated relationships. Now, you're telling me in 5 hours, you're going to make all of this first episode make sense and be worthwhile?
And put together some type of, like, mystery that coalesces and congeals into some combination of, like, weird spiritual ghost mixed with maybe a killer polar bear mixed with probably some NGO doing bad shit on the account of the government or somebody.
Right.
Mixed with regular evil people who are murdering dudes mixed with some other, like,
that's a lot.
It's a lot. You have a lot to do in five episodes.
Yeah,
now.
I mean, this one ends and you're going, okay, so wait a minute. Are there aliens?
Yeah,
are there
maybe.
Monsters?
Maybe.
What is it? Because we see that when, you know, when the supply guy shows up, something zooms fucking by there that, like I said, had White Walker from Game of Thrones vibes where you're just like, well, that's not good. By the way, that guy survived. I was shocked that whatever that was in there let him live because he's the one who called the police to come out after he finds the tongue. But yeah, you're obviously given a hell of a lot more questions than you are answers in this episode, and that can be a little frustrating as a viewer.
As to be expected from
now,
episode one.
All that we just said considered, I do think that's also where the opportunity for greatness comes in, because you give us this many questions, this much mystery, and this much confusion in the season premiere. If you do perform the miracle of wrapping it all up and making it make sense and be worthwhile by the end of the season's run, then you have done something special. Mm-hmm. And that's what I felt like when this, I was like, okay, they have set themselves up to really have to pull off something crazy to make this first episode make sense to me. And I'm really interested in seeing how they do that. Because, look, and it also had very different vibes. Like a very intentional vibe shift from the first three seasons under Nick Pizzolatto.
Yes.
And they go so far as to, like, this show is called Night Country. True Detective is the subheader.
Yep.
It's like, True Detective, Night Country. And that's like, to me, that was a big deal because it's kind of like we've seen this happen with other brands, other existing IP, where they kind of hand off, like, Andor is a good example. It's Star Wars Andor, right? Like with House of the Dragon, it's like Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, it's existing shit that gets turned into something else and, like, where the original creator is no longer involved. So his title gets bumped down to subheader, and there's a new title that that presents itself for the season. In this case, it's obviously Night Country, but there was a pretty distinct vibe shift from those first three seasons to this one. It's less gritty and a little more personality driven was one of the things I took from it, where it's like, really, the first three seasons, almost every single one of them, minus season two, which is just a total anomaly of dog shit. You're focused on two detectives and their personal lives and their personal beliefs about the case and what's going on. This has a little more scope to it. There's a little more, like, the scene where she busts in Danvers and she's trying to turn off Ferris Bueller, and the junior detective that's what's-his-name's son is in there. Like, he's clearly already looked into it. There's a lot of humor sprinkled in there, like a good little laugh when he's like, nope, I already checked that box, did that thing already, pressed that button, did this, and, oh, look at that, you found a little fucking secret cubby.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the vibe shift was interesting to me. I like that it's kind of establishing itself in a slightly different tone while still playing in the same ground.
Well, and yeah, you kind of mentioned the grit of the first three seasons, and I would say that, like, the first three seasons go harder on, like, the grit's a good word for it, but it's more like it's the detective human criminal element, right? And already we're kind of like genre blending in this episode, like we talked about up front. This has, like, more of like an X-Files alien tilt or a horror tilt, or like it's definitely got some other influences factoring in beyond just kind of the original True Detective thing that they did in the first three seasons.
Oh,
like,
dude,
it feels like a slightly different genre.
Yeah, if you showed me this episode without the title sequence and without telling me anything about it or the name of the show, and you said that was a reboot of The X-Files, I would have said,
okay.
I mean, it really, really did feel like an X-Files episode.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what the hell goes on these next five episodes, because like I said, this did not feel like the season premiere of a six-episode season of TV.
Right.
It felt like the premiere of a 10-episode season of very complicated, long, and drawn-out television. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be fun. I don't know what we're dealing with. If I had to guess based on just this first one that we've seen,
yeah,
my assumption, I don't know that they'll totally break from reality. So, like, remember in season one, Rust Cole has all these visions, like he sees the spiral in the sky that the birds do and whatnot. I think this stuff, like Barrett, I thought what you said was probably going to be how it ends up. I think there's going to be some vision shit, some like hallucination type shit that happens, some real spiritual type of shit. I don't know if we're going to completely break with reality and have this be like aliens or some fucking ice monster that's come up out of the ice. Like they accidentally unleashed a fucking, you know, frozen monster that's been down there since before man or whatever. Like, I think they're going to take us in those directions and make us think all that shit. And then there will be some perfectly scientific explanation for, in fact, what has happened to these people.
Scientific and human caused explanation, most likely. And I agree with you. I think that's probably one of the themes that they will stick with is that when wild stuff happens, we try to build up all of these fanciful, paranormal or supernatural reasons and explanations for how and why these things happen.
Yeah.
When really it's just the evil of man, right? It's just that humans can go to these types of lengths. So like what was racing around when Supply Guy shows up? Probably a human. Probably
somebody
who was involved in this. Yeah.
Is not
the ghost of a killer one-eyed polar bear or something.
Right.
Who also like, you know, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And for people who are familiar with like the Dyatlov Pass incident, it was this crazy event in the Ural Mountains in 1959 where this group of Russian hikers, Soviet hikers, like they all died, but in really weird circumstances where like very clearly in the middle of the night, like some kind of super quick freeze or some shit happened. And like one of the things you do if you get bad hypothermia is you try to strip all your clothes off because you actually feel hot when you are freezing to death.
Okay.
So there's like dead people scattered around this campsite and they could never quite figure out exactly what happened. Like it was a total freak type of accident thing that people attributed to like aliens or some type of like mountain monster when like scientifically it was probably just a like quick freeze type of thing that, that occurred. Anyway, this reminded me of that a little bit where it's like these guys are buried up to their necks in snow, clearly scared of or trying to resist death at the hands of something.
Yep.
Could have been a weather event of some kind. We are in Alaska.
Yeah.
There is no goddamn sun for months at a time or whatever. Not a bad start. Not a bad start. Not as great as I expected, I think, based on the initial feedback from the press.
Yep.
But certainly they could be cooking with something here. And I thought Jodie Foster was great.
Jodie Foster was great. Callie Reese was good. John Hawkes was good in limited time. Yeah, that was probably the most encouraging thing for me, is that, as you would expect, all of these performances were pretty dialed in from go.
Yeah, solid writing, just not enough time in 1 hour to give us enough to, I think, feel satisfied with the amount of mystery occurring so far. So we'll have to wait and see how it goes with episode two, which obviously airs this Sunday back on Max. Probably the most shocking thing to me was that they bumped True Detective down into that small font for the title. I was like, wow, they're really doing it. It makes me wonder if, like, will True Detective season five be, you know, True Detective Day Country, or whatever, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, are we gonna do a different title for every season now? And the overriding thing.
That would be my guess.
Yeah.
Probably bring in new creators, type of thing to like take their turn at the wheel.
Yeah,
basically,
I like that.
That could be that
good
could
for
be a
Pizzolatto.
Thing.
I'm sure he's getting paid off all this. He's an executive producer still.
Of course.
So is McConaughey and Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
I love that they get their names in there. They crush one season of TV, permanent executive producer status on that program.
Did we miss any important stuff
in
the scene work and all of that?
No, I don't know. Not a lot of light. This is gonna be dark
people forget that it's a country that where it's always night.
Yeah, it's dark at nighttime. This is night country.
Yeah.
There will be quite a bit of darkness.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't love that this is airing right in the heart of... I'm not a winter guy.
Winter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very rare to get like a sunny day, during our winter, which kind of gives you that seasonal affective disorder, as they call it.
Right,
the sad.
The sad.
And I don't want the sad to be further ratcheted up by the SAT on this show, and I think it's going to happen.
I kind of liked it. I kind of liked that the vibes
fit. Like the vibes
fit.
Fitting?
Like, yeah. You know, you're in your house, you're bundled up, you're getting cozy on the couch because who knows what type of terrors lie outside.
In that 28 degrees.
In that 28 degree weather.
And it's like negative 40 on the show.
And then perspective, right? Like, they played a football game. A football game in negative 6 with 70,000 people in the stands taking their shirts off and shit.
And our city shuts down when it hits 28.
When it hits 28. Yeah. Right? We're like, get in your houses!
Flee! Run for your lives! She's awake! Yeah, it's fucking hilarious.
So, yeah. But, definitely. Like Ross said, I'm sure we forgot stuff here. But that's great because you can call in and talk to us about it on the hotline.
That's right. We'll dive into anything we missed out on this Thursday on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. If you're in the Mollusk Militia, call the hotline. Give us your takes, your thoughts, your theories on this episode 1 of season 4. Part 1, I should say. Sorry. There's no episodes in this thing. Just parts.
Oh, parts.
Part
okay.
1 right. through 6. True Detective Night Country. Every week during this 6-episode run, Barrett and I will be doing an episode on Patreon exclusively available to those who are supporting our show by subscribing for as little as $5 a month to gain access to every audio episode we do as bonus coverage of True Detective Night Country, driven by hotline calls from our listeners in the Mollusk Militia. We appreciate y'all so much for getting on Patreon, taking part in those hotline call-driven episodes with us. Make sure if you're listening and you're like, Ooh, there is a thing they forgot. Like, definitely write it down right now and call the hotline. We would love to hear from you.
A lot of Lone Star beer appearances in this episode.
Yeah, which they had Lone Star in the first season. McConaughey
That's
was drinking
right.
Lone Star
That's
the whole
right.
time.
Oh, you're right. Yes.
See, there's one thing we forgot right there.
Yeah.
Nice little tie-in.
Yeah.
That's how he makes time into a flat circle, though, when he crushes
when
the one can.
And he's making his little...
Makes
his,
the figurines and whatnot.
Lone Star. Okay, that's... I was noticing the Lone Star, and I was like, weird they got all this Lone Star in Alaska. It's a callback.
There's going to be weird tie-ins, man. It's going to be weird tie-ins, and we'll talk about all of them on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Of course, we would also appreciate it if you'd support our show by supporting our sponsors who make the show possible. Today, we had HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/OCCfree for free breakfast for life. One breakfast item per box while subscription is active. HelloFresh.com/OCCfree. For more from me, Ross Bolin, check out the Ross Bolin podcast wherever podcasts are played or on YouTube.com/@TheRossBolinPodcast. For more from Barrett, follow him on the Instagram machine and X if you must, at Barrett Dudley, B-A-R-R-E-T-T Dudley. Also, we are on YouTube. If you've listened on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or any of the major podcast platforms for years, you could also watch if you wanted to, just FYI, on YouTube.com/oystersclamscockles, right? Isn't that it? YouTube.com/oystersclamscockles? Let me confirm. There might be an and is the reason at oystersclamscockles. No and. YouTube.com/oystersclamscockles. If you want to watch our show.
If you just Google YouTube oysters, clams, cockles,
yeah, that'll
it will
do
come
it.
Up. Yeah,
that'll
yeah.
do it too. Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. And then Barrett and I will see y'all Thursday on Patreon. Thanks for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.
It's us, number one, on that listing. And then number two is the clip of Arya yelling oysters, clams, and cockles.
That's good branding.
There you go.
That's how we wanted our SEO to work
out.
That's
great SEO.
Yeah.
Great SEO.
Y'all stay safe out there. Stay bundled up. Remember, 32 degrees is when water can turn into ice.
Wish me luck on my half mile journey back home.
Yeah, mine's a little more treacherous, Barrett. Yeah, yeah. I got to go 10 minutes.
I wish you luck as well then.
Thank you. Hopefully we're here on Thursday. Yeah, Survive this treacherous drive back to our domiciles.
If on your way back you start seeing the sunset,
yeah,
don't drive off a cliff.
Or a one-eyed polar bear.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't crash into that.
Yeah.
I haven't been drinking, which is huge.
That's good.
For both of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for being here, y'all. Peace.